Happy Good Friday out there, Team 42. It's your skipper here, Darius Dell, to present our macro minute for Friday, April 3rd, 2026. Hope everyone's having a great week. As always, we'll start with the executive summary from today's leadoff morning note. So let's dive right in. Today's key macro question is, did the White House just signal World War III? Our answer is per our fundamental research summary, which is derived from thousands of slides of institutional grade analysis that we unpack with highly regarded institutional investors each month. Our research views the probability of a U.S. fiscal crisis or total war involving the U.S. within the next 5 to 7 years as greater than 50%. We may have to revise this timeline to 5 to 7 months. Here are the most important things we learned today regarding the 6 key macro cycles that influence the momentum and dispersion within and across asset markets on a trend basis, starting with the growth cycle. The weak negative impulses in private sector labor income and nominal wage and salary compensation do not support our resilient U.S. economy or paradigm C themes and support our jobless recovery theme. The weak negative impulse in private sector employment and strong negative impulse in private sector average hourly earnings support our jobless recovery theme. The strong negative impulses in the civilian labor force, the labor force participation rate, and the employment to population ratio support our jobless recovery theme. Private sector job openings contracting nearly 15 times faster than labor supply on a year-over-year basis also supports our jobless recovery theme. The dramatic underperformance of employment growth relative to the growth rates of labor supply, corporate profits, retained earnings, and equipment investment, all of which are phenomenal leading indicators for employment growth intent, supports our jobless recovery theme. There's been no growth in true private services payrolls, which are 54% of the total, since the second half of 2023. Reminder, the Fed is still applying downward pressure on an already slowing labor market via a restrictive policy rate. The Fed's still restrictive policy rate increases the probability of a jobless recovery. Thankfully, the strong positive impulses in temporary employment and strong negative impulses in cyclical unemployment and long-term unemployment confirm the low probability of a developing recession in the U.S. economy signaled by jobless claims, the 42 macro Fab Five recession signaling indicators, and the 42 macro business cycle model. In China, the March unofficial composite PMI data did not support our outlook for firming growth. In Japan, the March final composite PMI data did not support our outlook for firming growth. Nothing actionable with respect to our Bayesian priors with respect to the inflation cycle or the monetary policy cycle. So shifting to the fiscal policy cycle, President Trump petitioned Congress for a $2.2 trillion discretionary budget that materially boosts defense spending. The White House's budget proposal outlines $1.5 trillion in funding for defense in fiscal 2027 versus $1 trillion requested for fiscal 2026. So 50% increase. The figure comprises $1.1 trillion in base Department of Defense discretionary spending, plus an additional $350 billion in mandatory expenditures tied to the U.S.-Israel-Iran conflict. Additionally, the budget proposal calls for a 10% reduction in non-defense discretionary spending, which would amount to roughly $73 billion. Per White House Budget Director Russell Vogt, President Trump promised to reinvest in America's national security infrastructure to make our nation safe in a dangerous world that they're actively making less safe. Going back to his quote, my apologies for the editorialism there, though I do get paid to editorialize, lots of money. The 2027 budget upholds this promise and would ensure that the United States continues to maintain the world's most powerful and capable military. More on that later. FYI, expenditures on national defense are annualizing at $988 billion on a fiscal year-to-date basis here in fiscal 2026. POTUS's demand of $1.5 trillion in fiscal 2027, which begins in October, not in 2 to 3 weeks, represents a historic percentage increase, the likes of which have not been seen since World War II. Let me say that again. POTUS's demand of $1.5 trillion in fiscal 2027, which is a 50%+ increase from what he requested in fiscal 2026, represents a historic percentage increase, the likes of which have not been seen since World War II. Reminder, fiscal largesse is perpetuating the K-shaped economy crisis through two channels. Number one, a historic Cantillon effect, and number two, an equally historic crowding out of the private sector by excessive public sector borrowing. Regarding the former, the Cantillon effect, The federal government spends roughly 80% more on everything, not including Social Security and Medicare, like net interest and national defense, than it spends on poor families via means-tested programs. So if you're poor, someone like me, or the folks that I left behind when I made it out of the hood, and made it out of the homeless shelter, and made it out of the sleeping in vans, we get roughly about $1.4 trillion a year from the government. The government spends another $2.6 trillion a year on things like net national defense, net interest, and all the other stuff that doesn't go to poor people outside of what it spends on Social Security and Medicare. So there's a narrative in this country that the poor and the lazy are the problem with the debt. And that narrative is just flat out being rejected by the data. I mean, just, I know a lot of people, millions of people get their, you know, political views pumped into their heads from the likes of Fox News or CNBC or Newsmax or CNN. That's fine. But if you want the truth, 42 Macro exists to tell the truth about the economy and financial markets in a way that helps investors, thousands of investors in 80 plus countries around the world, retire on time and comfortably. That's our sole objective when we report this type of information. But also I have a very important, I'm very passionate about trying to change the world, trying to bring Jesus back into the world. I mean, it's ridiculous. The markets are closed today. What about America says that we should be celebrating Christian holidays? Nothing, right? Certainly not now. So, I'm going to do my best to bring Jesus back into this country, bring Jesus back to Wall Street, bring Jesus back to politics, bring Jesus back to our portfolios, bring Jesus back to our societies and our communities. If I die, I'd be very happy to die trying doing that. So getting back into our executive summary, with respect to the liquidity cycle and going back to what Russell Vogt said about the world's most powerful and capable military, Iran shot down a U.S. F-15E fighter jet with a two-person crew, which is now subject to an active search and rescue operation, according to a U.S. official. By the way, these aren't supposed to be able to be seen by radar. They're not, these are technically invisible planes. So that's an issue. The first confirmed U.S. fighter jet combat loss represents a material escalation in the five-week conflict. The New York Times, the failing New York Times, reported that the downed aircraft earlier and indicated the crew status remains unknown. U.S. Central Command and the White House did not immediately respond to comment requests. Of course they didn't. They need to fabricate a story. If you're still thinking that the ongoing global energy and liquidity crises will conclude within or shortly after President Trump's 2 to 3 week timeline after today's policy signals, then let me remind you that fiscal 2027, of which the President Trump's $1.5 trillion defense budget proposal begins in October. They're petitioning to grow the Department of Defense's budget by over 50% in a fiscal year that begins in October. So, if you think the global liquidity crisis and the global energy crisis are going to be over when President Trump snaps his finger to the media, I think you need to go take a walk and get your feet on some grass. So nothing actionable with respect to the positioning cycle, with respect to our Bayesian priors. Continue reviewing, and you're definitely going to want to continue reviewing in terms of all the analysis in this report to learn whether our institutional grade risk management overlay is kissing Dr. Mo or evolving their signals in response to these or anticipated fundamental dynamics. Transition to our 42 macro dashboard. As always, a wrap up with a question from our community. This one's titled Vol Regime Classification. It says, why does it seem harder for equities? It says, hey, Darius, hope all is well. Loved last week's Around the Horn and looking forward always to the upcoming one. I've been spending a lot of time thinking about vol regime classification across different asset classes, and I keep running into something that genuinely puzzles me. For currencies, it seems relatively straightforward. You can take something like CVIX and compare a short-term moving average against a longer-term one, in which you get a clean read on whether you're in a high or low vol environment. But when I try to apply the same kind of thinking to equity SPY specifically, it breaks down dramatically. VIX doesn't seem to behave the same way as a regime classifier. The transitions are messier and the signal is noisier. I've tried various look-back windows and smoothing methods, but the equity vol regime problem seems fundamentally different. Is there something about the nature of equity volatility that makes the regime classification harder? Is the mean reverting behavior the VIX or the clustering of vol spikes? Is it the mean reverting behavior of the VIX or the clustering of vol spikes? Or is it just the right approach for equity? Equities are structurally different from what works for other asset classes, currencies, bonds, et cetera. Would love to hear your perspective. Thanks always for the incredible work. I'd be in a serious tizzy right now if it wasn't for Kiss and Dr. Mo. So thank you to the member for the incredibly thoughtful question. These are the types of institutional grade questions that we are unpacking together and learning together here in our global investor community, featuring thousands of investors all across the sophistication spectrum in 80 plus countries around the world. Some of the top buy side portfolio managers and analysts on Global Wall Street are in here participating with some of the most novice retail investors in the world. And you know what? That's phenomenal, because we exist, 42 Macro exists to completely eradicate the K-shaped nature of global financial markets. And if we don't succeed on that, we're certainly succeeding on that for the thousands of families that we currently serve. But if we don't succeed on that, if I die before that eventually happens, then that's totally fine, because it's a noble goal to die for. Getting back and answering this question. So the first thing I'll say is we don't use the VIX to determine the vol regime classification for stocks. So that's the first thing I'll say on this. Secondarily, the subscriber is hinting at the behavior of equities, because all the behavior of equities and how volatility clusters in the asset class, and how all volatility time series mean revert for all the asset classes. But they're hinting at something that's also important to note to the extent you're building models like this, which is all the asset classes behave differently. You have to study each asset class and each factor within each asset class independently to derive a constructive and predictive signal from the perspective of our volatility adjusted momentum signal, which we use to forecast a short to medium term momentum in asset markets. And we use those volatility adjusted momentum signals as independent models, as features within our global macro risk matrix market regime nowcasting process, which itself is part of the risk management overlays featured in KISS and Dr. Mo. So if you got to build a really credible, defensible, thoughtful, and ultimately predictive volatility momentum model if you want to manage risk like an institution would on the global buy side, like one of the top institutions would across the global buy side. So let me just share with you a couple statistics on what we're doing here from a volatility adjusted momentum signal perspective, and how that feeds into our other models and helps us create fantastic results through the lens of KISS, which is filtering our market regime signals to retail investors with a very simple, easy to follow asset allocation featuring 60% stocks, 30% gold, 10% Bitcoin when it's maxed out. And Dr. Mo, which is filtering those same market regime signals to institutional investors across 70 different factors in 12 different asset classes. So if you look at our volatility adjusted momentum signal for stocks, this is the S&P 500 back test right here. What this back test highlights is the percentage of cumulative performance by the VAMS condition dating back to the start of 1998. And so when the S&P 500, when our volatility adjusted momentum signal is suggesting that the S&P 500 is bullish, is signaling that S&P 500 is bullish, that's where 95% of the S&P 500's return has come from since January 1998. We use daily log price changes to sum daily loss price changes so that we don't anchor the back test on one time series. That's again, this institutional grade risk management and back testing. And so the key takeaway is that, if all you did with the S&P 100 was just be long when our volatility adjusted momentum signal is saying be long the S&P 100, you would have captured 95% of the upside in the asset class. That same statistic is 122% from Bitcoin, as far back as we have the data, which I believe begins in Bloomberg, in July of 2010. And so, as I mentioned, we use our volatility adjusted momentum signal to filter into our market regime nowcasting process, which is the top-down risk management overlay featured in KISS and Dr. Mo. And that creates incredibly positive results as well. So if you look at the percentage of percentage of cumulative performance by market regime, 67% of the S&P 500's return has come when our market regime nowcasting process has indicated we're in a risk on Goldilocks market regime. 31% has come when our market regime nowcasting process has indicated we're in a risk on reflation market regime. Only 6% has come when we're in a risk off inflation market regime. And minus 4% has come when we're in a risk off deflation market regime. Those figures are 56% for Goldilocks and 62% for reflation for Bitcoin. So that means, a cumulative 118% of Bitcoin's return has come when our markers are now casting process has indicated we're in a risk on regime. That's the figure is 98% for the S&P 500, minus 18% of Bitcoin's cumulative performance. So that means Bitcoin goes down when our market regime now casting process indicates that we're in a risk-off market regime. You know, so and that number is very negligible. You know, so I think 2% when we're in risk-off market regime for the S&P 500. Another way that you can tell that this process is incredibly effective is the decay in Sharpe ratios when you go from a risk-on regime 0.9, 0.6 to 0.1 to 0 from a risk-on regime to a risk-off regime in the S&P 500, and from 0.9 and 1.2 in Goldilocks and reflation to minus 0.7 and minus 0.1 in inflation and deflation, which are risk-off market regimes, risk-off with the inflation bias being inflation, risk-off with the disinflationary bias being deflation. And so, you know, the reason this stuff, you know, we can determine that this stuff works by looking at the rolling out a sample back test for stocks, for instance, when Dr. Mo is signaling to our customers that, hey, you should be long the S&P. And Dr. Mo, what Dr. Mo does is very similar to KISS in terms of incorporating the top-down risk management overlay for volatility targeting and the bottom-up risk management overlay for dynamic position sizing. When Dr. Mo says you need to be long the S&P 500, 125% of the S&P 500's cumulative return since January 1998 has come when Dr. Mo saying be long the S&P 500. And so what that ultimately means is that if the S&P 500 went up, let's just say for round number sake, $100 since January 1998, you would have actually made $125 just being long when you're long it and not being long where you're not supposed to be long it. That statistic is 125% as well for Bitcoin. And so the reason you can generate more return than even exist in the asset class is because you are creating a positively skewed return distribution and chopping off the left side of the left tail of the distribution by avoiding volatility drag and destabilizing drawdowns and what we would otherwise call type two errors in institutional risk management speak. And so by avoiding type two errors and creating a positively skewed return distribution in your portfolio or in each of these factors or in any of these asset classes, you're able to compound returns from a higher net asset value. And I don't know if you guys know this little dirty little secret about compounding and exponential growth, but when you have a higher quantity, the same percentage change increases the quantity faster. And so this is a dirty little secret of institutional risk management, which is if you avoid volatility drag, your wealth compounds faster, your client's wealth compounds faster, and ultimately your bonuses compound faster. And so we'll wrap it up there. Terry Still here presenting our macro minute for Friday. Good Friday, April 3rd, 2026. Everyone have a wonderful Easter weekend. Happy Easter. God bless you. Happy Passover to all those folks who are celebrating that as well out there. And look, let's bring some more love into the world. Let's bring some more humility into the world. Let's bring some more forgiveness into the world. Let's bring some more grace into the world. Let's stop hating and yelling at each other online. Let's stop denigrating the other side, the red, the blue, the Republican, the Democrat, the Jew, the Iran. Can we just all start loving again? Please. Have a great weekend. Cheers.
Disclaimer, 42 Macro does not provide, and no portion of our content purports to be, individualized or specific investment advice. And 42 Macro does not provide investment advice to individuals. All information provided by 42 Macro is general in nature and is made without regard to individual levels of sophistication or investment experience, investment preferences, objectives, or risk parameters, and without regard to the suitability of the content for individuals or entities who may access it. No information provided by 42 Macro should be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor should it be construed as tailored or specific to you or consumer thereof. You understand and agree that our content does not constitute specific recommendations of any particular investment, security, portfolio, transaction, or strategy, nor does it recommend any specific course of action is suitable for any specific person or entity or group of persons or entities. At any point in time, the employees of 42 Macro may own a portion of or all the ETF securities discussed in 42 Macro research content. 42 Macro research content is based upon information from sources believed to be reliable. 42 Macro is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information, nor is it responsible for the accuracy or authenticity of the information upon which it relies.